Good morning, everyone. So about half a year ago, had somebody reach out to us, to our business, someone from town here that had a project that they would have liked us to do. And it was, I would say, a man of influence, a man of somewhat of a position in town. And he kind of went over the project that he would have liked us to do, and we made arrangements to stop over here in town, take a look at his project, and it was a renovation project, a commercial project. And it was all interior work. He had basically taken a building and gutted it out, and he was going to make an apartment that he would use for Airbnb or something like that. And so we kind of talked about what would be involved with doing the project and all of that, and kind of left the ball in his court that he would reach out to us again when he's ready to move forward. And he got back to us again recently here in the last couple months and said he's ready to move forward, but that he'd like to meet with us again and kind of talk through some of the costs of the project and all of that. And he met us at our shop, and we kind of had a conversation about what all this project is going to require. And he was on a budget, and he didn't want to spend more than what he wanted to spend, like most people that are doing a construction project. And when he went to leave, he just said that one of the things I want you to know, I want to do this without permits. Like, we don't want to employ the services of Urb Inspections. They're the inspection company in this area. Because one of the things that would have required him to do was do some extra things that a commercial project would require. And so anyhow, he kind of left on that note. Actually, I wasn't in on that meeting. And my guys told him that that's not a call they're willing to make. Curtis is going to have to make that decision. And I wish I could say that it was an easy decision for me to make, but I feel like I wrestled with that decision a lot more than I'd like to admit. And there's a side of it that when a project like this comes in, especially somebody that has some influence and talks to people, that we want that job because we understand how important word of mouth advertising is. And this man sees a lot of people, and he's going to, if he's pleased with the way the project turns out, he's going to tell a lot of people. And so we kind of talked about it internally and just kind of talked through this and what all this means and what our options are. And he wanted us to plead innocence. In other words, just move forward with the project. If somehow the wrong people find out, that we could plead ignorance and say, hey, it was an interior project and we didn't realize that permits are required and all of that. Anyhow, so we sat down here the other week with him and just had that conversation, and we told him that that just isn't going to work for us. We're going to need to do the project right, and if he wants to move forward like he's talking, we're not going to be able to do the project for him. And he appreciated that. I'm not exactly sure where that's all going to end up yet. I'm not sure if we got the job yet or not. But regardless, I think we did the right thing. And that got circumstance, I guess, got me thinking a little about obedience. And it's a little different bunny trail this morning than we were talking about so far. Mose talked about obedience in devotions, and he made the comment that something to the effect that if we're faithful to God and we obey God, he will bless us. And I think that's true. But have you ever found yourself in a position where obedience was going to cost you something? And I was thinking about that because I was thinking about possibly if we decide to tell this man that we're going to do this project with permits and we're going to just go through the steps that are required, there's a possibility that he's going to go elsewhere and do the project without permits. And more than likely, he'll be able to do it and get through with it. And he sits on some boards in town, and you know, he could probably pull the thing off and with a little bit of influence. And so that kind of got me thinking about what if to obey cost me something. And the title of the message this morning is The High Cost of Obedience. Mentioned, that's a little bit different than what we typically think about, because we think about we obey God, we'll experience God's blessing, we're going to have peace and joy knowing that we did the right thing, and it's all good, right? But that's not always the case. And I would like to look at some cases this morning, some situations in the Bible where that was not the case, and the ones that chose obedience had to pay a high cost for that decision. Obedience is easy when it's expected of us, but much harder when there's a cost associated with it. And my goal for the message this morning is to challenge us to examine our level of commitment and obedience to God. And as we go along, I want us to think about our daily lives and how committed we are to obedience, even when it costs us something. First of all, you can turn to Genesis 39. And I'm going to read verses 7 to 20. Genesis 39, verse 7 to 20. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said unto his master's wife, "Behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within. And she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. And it came to pass, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and was fled forth, that she called unto the men of her house and spake unto them, saying, "See, he hath brought in an Hebrew unto us to mock us. He came in unto me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice. And it came to pass, when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled and got him out. And she laid up his garment by her until his Lord came home. And she spake unto him according to these words, saying, "The Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us came in unto me to mock me. And it came to pass, as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out. And it came to pass, when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, 'After this manner did thy servant to me,' that his wrath was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in prison." And Joseph is a man that his obedience cost him his reputation. And in this story, it cost him his freedom. Joseph was in a position where he could have chosen to do the easy thing, the thing that to just follow the temptation, give in to temptation, and likely no one would have ever found out. Joseph was far from home. He had no accountability. He was in a position of authority. He was in a position of privilege. He was in a position where it would appear like he had everything he wanted. And it was up to him to make the calls on a daily basis. It was up to him to, it appears that he would have given the orders in the household. The point on this, the point on Joseph that I have is true integrity obeys even when no one is watching. True integrity obeys even when no one is watching. In verse 9, Joseph talks about it talks about his encounter here with Potiphar's wife and his rebuff of her advances. And he says, how then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And I think that was the key in Joseph being able to do the right thing even when no one was watching. He understood he had a right view of God, and he understood that even though he was in a place where he could probably get away with this, no one would ever know, and possibly Potiphar would never find out. He knew that God was his real authority, and it would be sinning or being disobedient to God. And his integrity here in this story prepared Joseph for the future. And all through Joseph's life, we see him living a life of obedience, whether he was at home or in Potiphar's house or in prison or in a position of authority. His faithfulness now helped him to remain obedient and humble when he got into a position of authority and power later in life. Can you imagine the wickedness of Egypt? And can you imagine a man in Joseph's power when Pharaoh put him just below him? Can you imagine the temptations that Joseph probably faced? I'm sure the Bible doesn't record it, but I'm sure he faced many more, maybe much stronger temptations than this one with Potiphar's wife. And when there's power and authority, how many temptations there can be. Joseph was obedient even though it cost him his position and reputation. His obedience cost him years in an Egyptian jail. And I doubt when he had this conversation with Potiphar's wife, I don't know how well he knew Potiphar's wife or what, but I imagine he probably had no clue that standing up and doing the right thing would cost him what it did. But you know, even so, if Joseph would have understood that his obedience or his standing up against Potiphar's wife would have landed him in prison, I doubt he would have done anything differently, because he had a proper perspective of obedience to God. Couple questions for me, for us. Am I as faithful when no one is watching as I am when others can see? Do I compromise my integrity in private because my actions may never be seen? And do I fear God more than I fear being exposed? And Joseph was an example to us of someone that no matter where he was, no matter if somebody was watching, no matter if he ever thought he would get found out, he was committed to obedience. For the next one, you can turn to Daniel 6. And I'm going to read the first 10 verses of Daniel 6. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom, and over these three presidents of whom Daniel was first, that the princes might give accounts unto them, and the king should have no damage. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Then said these men, "We shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God." Then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said unto him, "King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom, the governors and the princes, the counselors and the captains have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing that it be not changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not." Wherefore King Darius signed the writing and the decree. Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being opened in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. And we know what happened here. I have down here Daniel, obedience that cost him his position. And we know the whole story, so we know how it all worked out in the end. But remember, Daniel could only see what was in front of him. And I don't know what all Daniel thought when he heard what happened, but I am very confident that Daniel knew that something bad would happen to him if he disobeyed this edict. The thought for us, obedience begins before crisis. Obedience begins before crisis. And we pick up Daniel's story in the beginning of this book when he comes into captivity here. But I have no doubt that Daniel and his homeland lived a life of obedience and a life of integrity. I'm sure that he had negative peer pressure from some of his Jewish friends back in his homeland. And I'm sure Daniel was no different than any other youth today. I'm sure he had some of the same temptations, and I'm sure he had some of the same tendencies to go the wrong way. But it's obvious to me that his obedience didn't start with the story that we read today. Think of the story in the beginning of Daniel when they brought wine before Daniel and his friends and the food that was offered to the idols, and they said, "Here you go." And Daniel refused. And what strikes me about that story is he didn't just refuse, because he probably knew if he would have just refused, he would have been forced to eat that food, drink that wine. But instead, he says, "I'll tell you what, we're not going to eat that food or drink that wine, but here's what we can do, and let's try it out for 10 days and see what happened." And Daniel put his salesman face on, as it were, and I think he was that committed to obedience that he was like, "How can I make this work?" And he gave this proposition, it was accepted, and God blessed that. One of the things that I think about for us today is that we live in a time of cultural tolerance. And for the most part, none of us know much about political consequences for obedience. And I'd like to suggest that in times like we're living right now, that true character is built. And if we can live a life of obedience to God now, and if we can live a life that's honoring to God, a life of integrity now, it prepares us for times when we may face tests like this down the road. And I don't want to be a pessimist, but I wonder if that time isn't too far away. When you read the news and you see all the incredible debauchery and the just the total lack of intelligence and you know, people that are just not following God's design, that only goes one direction. And eventually a nation like that will have, there will be consequences for standing for the truth. The second point I have for us here on Daniel is genuine obedience doesn't change with circumstances. Genuine obedience doesn't change with circumstances. So Daniel found himself here. So again, this going back to the story of proving him and his friends with the pulse and the vegetables and the water. He somehow moved up through the ranks and became a president here, a man of influence, a man of authority. And he still faithfully served God. When this writing got signed into a decree, the very next sentence says, Daniel knew that the writing was signed and he went and prayed. His obedience didn't change. His obedience, he served God faithfully regardless of the circumstances. And notice, Daniel didn't quietly comply. He didn't choose to go into his house, close the window and pray, or go into his bedroom, or give it a little bit of time. I'm sure he knew those men were waiting outside, waiting to catch him and report him to the king. Genuine obedience doesn't change with circumstances. And I'd like to, one thing that I thought about is when we're out and about, one thing that is not uncommon for us to do is to either have lunch with customers or vendors or something. And one of the things that it amazes me how, even though people say they're Christian, it can be kind of unusual to bow your head and have prayer before a lunch. And one of the things that we do is when we're out for lunch, we'll say, hey, we'd like to have prayer here before we eat. And we bow our heads and have an audible prayer. And that has done something to me that I guess that has been good for me. And there's times that we've been out with vendors that probably are not professing Christians, and it has been good for me to just take a stand and be willing to just show my faith. One of the other things that I had to think about is that I think about often with the story about Daniel is how he was in a position where there was so much, I don't want to say temptation, but tendency for his integrity to be compromised. Even the story of Joseph and the story of Daniel. And one of the things I had to think about is as we go about life, to be careful the circumstances that we put ourselves in, that we're not in a position that makes it easy for us to compromise. And I had to think about that. I was just thinking for some practical applications, but the bar in Morris, okay? Here a number of years ago, Larry and Bill Connolly owned that bar. And he always made it very clear to me that they're trying to build that up and make that a good place to eat. What would be wrong with going into a place like that and getting something to eat? Again, we need to be careful that we don't put ourselves in an environment where it places a temptation to compromise our convictions and obedience. And as we, I don't know what all your work has, or who you come in contact with on a daily basis, but let's remember to make sure we don't put ourselves in places that makes it easy for us to compromise our convictions or our obedience to God. A couple questions here on this point. If obedience requires me to choose between my reputation or faithfulness, which would I choose? Do I compromise my obedience to God when it might cost me the approval of others? Or do I compromise my obedience to avoid attention? The next one I'd like to look at is 1 Samuel 1. This is the story of Hannah, and I would like to read verses 9 through 28. We have Hannah, obedience that required surrender. So Hannah rose up after they had eaten in Shiloh and after they had drunk. Now Eli the priest sat upon a seat by a post of the temple of the Lord, and she was in bitterness of soul and prayed unto the Lord and wept sore. And she vowed a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if thou wilt indeed look on the affliction of thine handmaid and remember me, and not forget thine handmaid, but wilt give unto thine handmaid a man-child, then I will give him unto the Lord all the days of his life, and there shall no razor come upon his head. And it came to pass, as she continued praying before the Lord, that Eli marked her mouth. Now Hannah, she spake in her heart, only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. Therefore Eli thought she had been drunken. And Eli said unto her, How long wilt thou be drunken? Put away thine wine from me. Put away thy wine from thee. And Hannah answered and said, No, my lord, I am a woman of a sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but have poured out my soul before the Lord. Count not thine handmaid for a daughter of Belial, for out of the abundance of my complaint and grief have I spoken hitherto. Then Eli answered and said, Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant thee thy petition that thou hast asked of him. And she said, Let thine handmaid find grace in thy sight. So the woman went her way, and did eat, and her countenance was no more sad. And they rose up in the morning earnestly, and worshipped before the Lord, and returned, and came to their house in Ramah. And Elkanah knew Hannah his wife, and the Lord remembered her. Wherefore it came to pass, when the time was come about after Hannah had conceived, that she bare a son, and called his name Samuel, saying, Because I have asked him of the Lord. And the man Elkanah and all his house went up to offer unto the Lord the yearly sacrifice and his vow. But Hannah went not up, for she said unto her husband, I will not go up until the child be weaned, and then I will bring him, that he may appear before the Lord, and there abide forever. And Elkanah, her husband, said unto her, Do what seemeth thee good. Tarry until thou have weaned him. Only the Lord establish his word. So the woman abode and gave her son suck until she weaned him. And when she had weaned him, she took him up with her with three bullocks and one ephah of flour and a bottle of wine. And she brought him unto the house of the Lord in Shiloh. And the child was young. And they slew a bullock, brought the child to Eli. And she said, O my Lord, as thy soul liveth, my Lord, I am the woman that stood by thee here, praying unto the Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord hath given me my petition, which I ask of him. Therefore also I have lent him to the Lord. As long as he liveth, he shall be lent to the Lord. And he worshipped the Lord there. I have for us a truth for us. Obedience sometimes means surrendering God-given gifts back to the Lord. In verse 10, Hannah's story begins with years of disappointment and grief, and it says she desired a child so much she was in bitterness of soul. And we see in these verses Hannah promised complete obedience and surrender to God prior to knowing the outcome. And Hannah wanted a child so much She was asking God for it, and she vowed this vow to God. And it's hard for me to imagine a mom that wanted a child so badly, and she was finally blessed with a child and giving that child up. And I imagine, the Bible talks about that. She got to see him occasionally, but it's hard for us that have children to imagine wanting a child so bad, the Lord blessing us with that, and then giving it back to him for his service. And I guess the question that I had to think of for us, do I obey even if it means giving the things I love back to God? What is more important to me, obedience to God or the things or loved ones he gave to me? Has God given me something that he is asking me to give up or surrender? And that's a very personal thing, and it's hard to, I had to think of the story of Abraham too, and it's hard to imagine being in a place where God clearly commanded him to give up the son that he loved. And Abraham didn't know how that all was going to end up, but he was obedient to God anyhow. The last one I have is not from the Bible, but it's the story of Felix Mons. I'm going to read the story of Felix Mons, the first Anabaptist martyr. Felix Mons lived in the early 1500s during a time when the church and the government were tightly joined together. Religious unity was enforced by law, and questioning the teachings of the state church was considered both spiritual rebellion and civil disobedience. Felix Mons was an educated man who studied the scriptures carefully, especially the words of Christ and the writings of the apostles. Through his study, he became convinced that baptism in the New Testament followed repentance and faith, and that obedience to Christ must come from a willing, personal commitment, not from coercion or tradition. This conviction placed him in direct conflict with the authorities. Felix knew the cost. He understood that refusing to conform could lead to imprisonment, loss of property, and even death. Still, he believed that obedience to God must take precedence over obedience to men. Felix Mons was arrested multiple times. Each time he was given an opportunity to save himself. He was told that if he would recant his beliefs, remain silent, and return to the state church, his life would be spared. But he refused. Felix did not resist arrest. He did not call for violence or political change. He simply would not deny what he believed the scriptures clearly taught. To him, compromise would have been disobedience to Christ. In 1527, the authorities sentenced Felix Mons to death by drowning. As he was led to the river in Zurich, he prayed and entrusted himself to God. Witnesses recorded that his own mother stood nearby and urged him to remain faithful to the end. Felix Mons died not because he was a criminal or a rebel, but because he chose full obedience over compromise. He could have lived by staying silent or by compromising his beliefs, but he chose obedience instead. And I have, obedience requires faithfulness no matter the cost. Obedience requires faithfulness no matter the cost. And the story of the Anabaptist martyrs is 500 years old. And it's stories like that that, again, challenge me that am I living a life of commitment to Christ now that would prepare me for circumstances like that? I think probably, if you're like me, you probably are, you can hardly imagine being in a circumstance where you know that living in obedience to Christ may cost you your life. And it's hard for us to fathom that. But again, it's as we live lives of commitment and integrity now that prepare us if something like that would happen. Felix could have avoided the high cost of obedience by simply remaining silent. But to him, failing to teach what he believed to be true meant compromising obedience. The other thought I have for us today, faithful obedience is an inspiration to others. And you probably heard the stories of the Anabaptists that were burned at the stake or were tortured, and they were, while they were being tortured or burned, they were encouraging the remaining, the others, to their fellow believers, to remain faithful. And just like the faithfulness of the Anabaptists encouraged their fellow believers, our faithfulness can be an inspiration to our families and those around us. Felix Mons showed us that following Jesus isn't just about what we believe, but it's about what we're willing to stand for when it costs us something. Again, this idea of the high cost of obedience is a different thought, and it's a thought that maybe we don't find ourselves thinking about very often because of where we live and how so many times obedience does bring blessing. But in closing, obedience has never been cheap. God's people have many times paid a price for faithfulness. And the only generation that struggles with this truth is the one that expects obedience without cost. And the question for us this morning isn't whether or not obedience will cost us something, but the question is whether we are going to be willing to pay the price. Let's kneel for prayer.